Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into something fascinating. The Thai forest tradition.
Yeah, its origins, how it's spread globally. We'll be looking closely at the founder, Ajahn Chah, and two key Western figures who train with him.
That's right, Ajahn Amaro and Ajahn Sumedho. Really significant names in bringing this lineage west.
And our goal for you, listening in, is to get a really clear picture of this tradition. Who were these people? What did they teach?
And maybe how those teachings, you know, things like mindfulness, meditation, how they might offer some fresh perspectives for finding a bit of inner peace today.
Exactly, in our busy lives.
We're working from a report that details their lives, their achievements, their core teachings. It's pretty comprehensive.
And here's a little hook to get us started. Think about this. A forest monastery founded in Thailand in a place known for malaria. Apparently haunted.
Haunted, really.
Reputedly, yeah. And that place became the wellspring for a global spiritual movement. It's quite something.
Wow. Okay, let's definitely dive into that. Where do we start? Ajahn Chah, the founder.
Makes sense. Ajahn Chah. Born Cha Chuang Sha, way back in 1918. Rural northeast Thailand, farming family background.
And he had an early brush with monastic life.
He did, yeah. At 9 years old, he became a novice monk for about 3 years. That's actually where he learned to read and write. Basic, but essential monastic education, then.
Then back to lay life for a bit.
For a while, yes. But the pull was strong, it seems. He re-entered monastic life, got full ordination in 1939, took the name Supado.
Supado, meaning?
Something like well-born or auspicious. Yeah. A good name to start with, I suppose.
Okay, so he's ordained, but then comes a major turning point.
A huge one. 1946, his father passed away, and this deeply affected him. It seems to have really focused his mind on impermanence, the nature of life and death.
And that led him to?
To undertake what's called a Tudong. It's a kind of wandering ascetic pilgrimage. He traveled across Thailand, really searching for deeper understanding.
Seeking answers.
Exactly. And this period of seeking, this wandering, eventually brought him to Ajahn Mun Huardatta.
Ah, very big name in the forest tradition.
Hugely respected meditation master. Meeting him was, well, transformative for Ajahn Chah. It set the course for the next stage of his practice.
Which involved?
7 years of really rigorous practice, deep in the tradition, meditating in forests, caves, even cremation grounds.
Cremation grounds, wow. That's intense.
It is. The idea is to confront the reality of death of impermanence very directly, no escaping it.
And Ajahn Mun's core teaching, what did Ajahn Chah take from him?
The profound simplicity of it all, really. Ajahn Mun emphasized just establishing mindfulness right here, right now, and recognizing that everything we experience, thoughts, feelings, sensations, it all just arises and passes away within our own heart mind.
So not getting lost in complex philosophy, but focusing on direct experience.
Precisely. And that direct, very practical, experiential approach, that became the hallmark of Ajahn Chah's own teaching later on. It's key if you feel, you know, overwhelmed by different spiritual paths. Keep it simple.
Okay, so after those intense 7 years, he decides to settle down, in a sense.
Well, settle down and establish a place for others. 1954, he founds Wat Nong Paphong.
That's the famous one. Near his birthplace.
Yeah, back in that rural area. But it was in this challenging, uninhabited forest grove. The name itself, Wat Nong Paphong, apparently refers to a pond, a nong, surrounded by dense pong trees.
And it wasn't exactly paradise.
Oh, far from it. Malaria was a real issue. Shelter was incredibly basic at first. Getting enough food, that was a daily uncertainty.
Really underscores that forest tradition emphasis on austerity, doesn't it? Relying on inner resources.
Completely. Builds resilience, inner strength. But despite all those hardships, something about Ajahn Chah, his integrity, his way of teaching, it started attracting people.
Disciples began to gather.
They did. And then in 1966, the first Westerner arrived, Ajahn Sumedho. We'll definitely talk more about him.
Okay. But how did Ajahn Chah structure this growing community in such a challenging place?
He really emphasized the Vinaya, the Buddha's monastic code. Discipline was crucial alongside meditation. In 1957, he laid out specific monastic rules, the Akhanar, Adot Puntkan, based directly on those ancient teachings.
Providing structure and maintaining integrity as it grew.
Essential. Otherwise, things can fray, especially under hardship.
Right. Now, let's shift focus to one of those key Western disciples you mentioned, Ajahn Amaro.
Yes, Ajahn Thanissaro Amaro. Originally Jeremy Horner, born in England, 1956.
And his background was, well, not monastic at all initially.
Not at all. University degree in psychology and physiology. He himself acknowledged having quite typical post-university interests, a lot of different experiences, pretty far removed from a monastery.
Which makes his turn towards it even more interesting.
It does. It shows how this tradition could connect with people from very different Western backgrounds, maybe even skeptical ones initially.
So what drew him in? You went to Thailand in 78.
That's right. And he ended up at Wat Pa Nanashat. That's the International Force Monastery, Ajahn Chah, specifically set up for Westerners.
Ah, okay. A dedicated place.
Exactly. And there, he was really inspired. By Ajahn Chah, of course, but also by Ajahn Pabakaro, a senior American monk already practicing there. That personal connection, that encouragement, it was the catalyst.
That was the final push he needed.
Seems like it. He decided to go for it, became a lay renunciate, then a novice.
And then full ordination.
Yes. In 1979, ordained as a bhikkhu, directly by Ajahn Chah, followed by 2 intense years of training right there in Thailand.
Immersing himself fully.
Absolutely. That direct transmission, living the life under Ajahn Chah's guidance, you can't really replicate that. It formed the bedrock for everything he did later in the West.
And he certainly did a lot. Back in England, he helped Ajahn Sumedho set up Chithurst Monastery.
He played a key role, yes. And then, this is amazing, he did an 830-mile walking pilgrimage, Tudong style.
830 miles, wow.
Walking. He wrote about it in his book, Tudong, The Long Road North. It really embodies that spirit of the tradition, letting go, perseverance.
Incredible dedication. And that led to work in the U.S.
Well, after that experience, his teaching trips to Northern California in the early 90s really resonated with people. There was a lot of interest.
Enough to start a monastery there.
Exactly. That led to the founding of Abhayuri Monastery in 1996. He was co-abbot there for 14 years.
Until 2010?
Yes. Then he returned to England, taking over as abbot of Amaravati Buddhist Monastery.
Succeeding Ajahn Sumedho. So a really continuous thread of leadership in the West.
Definitely. A major force in establishing and guiding these important centers.
And he's also known for his writing.
Oh, very much so. He's a prolific author. Books, articles, making Buddhist practice and philosophy accessible, taking complex ideas and explaining them clearly for a Western audience.
How does he approach that? What's his emphasis?
He really focuses on integrating the practice into daily life in the West. He uses clear explanations, storytelling, and he's very thoughtful about the whole cross-cultural transmission thing. You know, how do you translate these ancient teachings faithfully but relevantly?
Like using analogies that resonate.
Precisely. He often uses this analogy of tending a garden for mindfulness and wisdom. Mindfulness is like carefully noticing what's growing, the good stuff, the weeds. Wisdom is knowing which ones to cultivate and which to gently remove. It's practical. It clicks for people.
That makes sense. Okay, let's bring in the other major figure here, the pioneer, Ajahn Sumedho.
Right. The very first Westerner to train under Ajahn Chah, Robert Carr Jackman, born in the U.S. in 1934.
And his path was also quite varied before finding Buddhism. Yeah. Navy service, academia.
Yes. U.S. Navy during the Korean War, degrees in Far Eastern studies, South Asian studies, even time in the Peace Corps in Borneo. Quite a journey before the journey.
What was the spark for him?
It seems it was a single moment. 1966, Singapore. He just saw a Buddhist monk. And something about that sight, the simplicity, the presence maybe, it just lit a fire in him, sparked this profound interest.
Amazing how one moment can change everything.
Isn't it? It shows how the core teachings, that sense of peace maybe, can call to people from any background, even very secular ones. What do you think resonated so strongly in that simple image for him?
Hard to say for sure, but maybe a sense of stillness in a busy world. An alternative way of being. Anyway, that moment led him straight to Thailand.
Pretty much. He was ordained as a novice, then fully ordained as a bhikkhu in 1967, and then 10 years. 10 years of that intensive training at Wat Nong Phapong.
Becoming Ajahn Chah's senior Western disciple.
Exactly. He really absorbed the training, experienced Ajahn Chah's methods firsthand, which could be quite unconventional, challenging.
Designed to shake up attachment.
Designed to get you to see things directly, beyond your concepts, loosen the grip. He also played a key role in setting up Wat Pa Nanachat in 75, the international monastery, and was its first abbot, hugely important for other Westerners coming later.
Right. And then the pivotal trip to England with Ajahn Chah in 77.
Yes. Ajahn Chah saw the interest brewing in the West and basically said to Ajahn Sumedho, you should stay, start something here.
And he did. That led to Chithurst.
Siddha Viveka, yes, commonly called Chithurst, founded in 79, and then the larger Amaravati Monastery in 84. He was abbot there until he retired in 2010, foundational work.
And he also established an ordination path for women.
He did, the Siddhara 10 Precept Ordination, recognizing the need and the contribution of female practitioners in the West, a significant step.
What about his teaching style? What made him connect so well?
People often mention the clarity. Very direct, very practical, often with a good dose of humor, which helps. He just had this way of making profound ideas relatable to everyday life.
Any specific phrases or techniques associated with him?
Oh yeah, that simple, powerful phrase. Right now it's like this, just bringing you back to accept the present moment, whatever it holds. The sound of silence meditation is another key one he taught. And just that core message, trust in awareness. Trust your own capacity to know.
Right now, it's like this. That's very grounding. So for someone maybe lost in thought spirals, what's a practical takeaway from that focus on the now?
Well, just stopping, just noticing. What am I actually feeling? What's actually happening? Not the story about it, but the direct experience.
Hmm.
Even for a breath, it breaks the cycle, doesn't it?
It does. Okay, we've looked at their individual stories. What about the core teachings themselves? What's the common thread running from Ajahn Chah through Amaro and Sumedho?
Well, Ajahn Chah's bedrock principles were things like simplicity, just keep the practice straightforward, mindfulness, sati, that constant awareness, understanding impermanence, Anisha, and crucially, letting go, releasing attachments.
And that idea that everything is teaching us.
Exactly. Seeing a life itself, difficulties included, as the teacher, and really prioritizing training the heart, developing wisdom through experience, not just, you know, intellectual book learning.
So how did Ajahn Amaro carry that forward?
You really see those principles in his teaching. He puts a strong emphasis on mindfulness and wisdom, how they work together. And as we said, he's really focused on how you actually live this in the West, navigating the cultural translation.
Making it practical for modern life.
Right, without diluting the essence.
And Ajahn Sumedho's emphasis, how did he transmit those core ideas?
He just had this knack for making it incredibly accessible that right now it's like, this is a perfect example. Immediate, practical, the sound of silence, meditation, trusting awareness. It all served to bridge that gap between traditional Buddhist thought and how Westerners tend to approach things. Yeah. Very direct, very experiential.
It's really quite something, isn't it? How this lineage, born in that tough forest environment,
has had such a huge, lasting global impact. Absolutely. Wat Nong Phaephong is still the heart, the center. But now there are over 250 branch monasteries in Thailand alone, plus all the international affiliates.
The Forest Sangha community is worldwide now.
Pretty much every continent. And yeah. Monasteries are still being founded long after Ajahn Chah passed away in 92. It shows the strength of the teachings.
And Wat Nong Phaephong itself remains a focal point.
Oh, yes. Big annual gathering there on the anniversary of Ajahn Chah's death. And they maintain that strict discipline, the simple lifestyle. It's kept its integrity.
The ordination hall, the reliquary, the museum, all anchoring the tradition.
They serve as important reminders, yeah. Physical touchstones for the practice.
And looking westward, Ajahn Sumedho's role feels immense. Chithurst and Amaravati.
Absolutely foundational. They became the models, the inspiration for so many other centers globally. He really planted the seeds.
And Ajahn Amaro continues that work.
Right.
Leadership, teaching, writing.
Vital work. Reaching so many people seeking an authentic path. And together, think of all the Western monks and nuns they've trained over the decades, multiple generations now carrying the lineage forward.
Their accessible styles were key, weren't they? Making Theravada Buddhism relatable.
Crucial. They managed to convey the depth without getting bogged down in jargon or cultural barriers that might put people off.
So wrapping up this deep dive, it's really a story of connection, isn't it? Ajahn Chah's deep realization. And how Ajahn Amaro and Ajahn Sumedho became conduits, carrying that wisdom across cultures.
From a remote Thai forest to a truly global presence, it's remarkable.
And those core teachings, mindfulness, simplicity, impermanence, letting go, they don't feel dated, do they? They seem just as relevant for anyone trying to navigate life today.
Absolutely. They offer a path, a practical way to find more understanding, more inner peace, wherever you are on your journey. It's timeless wisdom.
So maybe a final thought for you to take away. Consider that simple act, just observing the present moment, like Ajahn Sumedho suggested. How could that shift things for you day to day amidst all the complexity? What might you discover if you just paused, even briefly, and noticed, right now, it's like this.